You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 9th, 2009. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle, starting off with my summer Bit by Bits. It's been a while, and today was kind of an impromptu Bit by Bit that came about, and wanted to get this up here just to continue the conversations that I've been having with other educators. Pretty exciting stuff about virtual worlds. A little backdrop, I've written a post for Tech Learning, and I posted it Bit by Bit, and I'll put the link there. A couple weeks ago, talking about how museums in Second Life are just so engaging, and actually asking the question, could they be better than some of the real life experiences when we take kids to museums on field trips? And I'll let you read the article for my argument on that. But there's such amazing resources in Second Life, and I've just been chomping at the bit, wanting somehow to get students to that content. And of course, the primary thing when you think about that is, how do we keep them safe? So I've been having some great conversations with teachers in Second Life, and we've actually started a group to continue that conversation, and I'll invite you to join that group. The group's name in Second Life is called K-12 in SL Now. You can look for me. My avatar's name is Bistobock. That's B-I-S-T-O-B-O-C-K, and then you'll see that that group there as well. And we'd love to have you join us. I'll also put the wiki in that we have established, and you'll see that people are entering in their information, and we are trying to get a conversation going there as well, and possible podcasts. One of the examples that I've been using when I talk about how rich the experiences are in Second Life, and that it just seems criminal to not be able to get our kids to these resources, the exemplar I've been talking about is the King Tut exhibit, which is truly amazing. I found it about 2 weeks ago. Well, today I went back to the King Tut exhibit in Second Life to go check it out, and it's gone. And I'll put the link in when you put a link for Second Life in there, you call it a slurl, S-L-U-R-L. And I'll put that in too so you can go see it. But what it does now is it actually points you to the Heritage Key. So I was pretty surprised to find out that it had moved and had never heard of Heritage Key. And basically, when you go to that site in Second Life, it tells you how to register for Heritage Key to get into this other virtual space to experience the King Tut exhibit, which has moved over there. So I immediately did that, and I got there and I met up with Foolish Frost, who is one of the IT guys there, and said, hey, can you come and do an interview with me, because I'm totally excited about this. And so he came on and talked with me and explained a little bit about Heritage Key and what they're trying to get established in an open sim setting. So this is completely separate from Second Life, and thereby you could bring in your students, at least theoretically. There still are some of the concerns that we'd have in Second Life going into this sim. So I made a great connection today. Thanks to Foolish for letting me podcast this, and he's given me the follow-up, and I've already got an email out to the CEO so that we can continue talking about this with John, and hope to continue the conversation. So I'm just going to throw this up there for you to hear and join in, and invite you to go check out heritage-key.com. I'll have the link in the show notes, and learn all about the King Tut exhibit. Certainly get into the Heritage Key sim and check it out. You'll be absolutely blown away. And as you'll hear, they're working on other type of historical museum. So a little tagline from the website itself is, what is Heritage Key? HeritageKey.com aims to provide the best and most up-to-date information, guides of sites or museums, and photos of key ancient world or heritage sites and objects, spiced up with an immersive 3D experience to explore the ancient world. And you will be blown away by the King Tut exhibit. So look for more continued conversations with this. We'll be following up. And I should also say that Heritage Key is part of Resible. You'll hear Foolish say that in the podcast, and I'll provide a link to that as well. So enjoy and head on over. You'll understand that as Foolish, Frost, and I are talking, we are actually standing in the sim at the King Tut exhibit. So we refer to that several times just to give you a visual. Thanks for listening, and I will have some more podcasts soon.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, Foolish.
Is that what I should call you?
You know, at work, where I work at, everybody does call me Foolish.
Okay. So,
my actual name's John, but
John.
Technically Foolish seems to work just as well. Nobody really calls me by name, so.
All right. So you're okay with a podcast with this?
Well, I don't have a problem with
it.
Just
great.
Keep in mind, I'm not the owner of the company.
Okay.
I am pretty much chief IT, if you know, chief of anything means anything in a smaller company. But you know, basically what I do is I try and help coordinate a lot of the technologies going on with OpenSim and some of the features we're dealing with. So,
great. Well, this is just uncanny coincidence to me, because I've been writing about the Egypt Museum in my blog and kind of lamenting the fact that I can't get kids in there. And I went back to check on it today, and it was gone, and that's where I saw the now, what is the name of the company? Heritage?
No, we are actually Resible.
Resible, okay.
Resible is the company group that is working on most of these projects and such. The main thing with it is that there are two different aspects. There is Resible, the company, and there's Heritage Key, the project.
Okay.
So Heritage Key belongs to Resible as a project with a series of archaeologists and investors helping to push it along.
Wow. So, yeah, I went to the site in Second Life and realized it was no longer there, and it's gone here, and I haven't really, I'm just so excited, I'm calling you up, because I haven't even had time to really read about all this. But is this going to be possible to bring students into?
We are working on a lot of different aspects of that. One of the primary reasons we started building this outside of Second Life is Second Life has a age limit of
right.
age 18. People below that age, of course, cannot go into Second Life, even if the material is perfectly normal, because there's no way to control who comes in. Now, we don't have any illusions that we can control what other people logging into the system can have conversations about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not exactly, you know, we're pretty much the only ones who are going to be able to build in here. So
right.
You're not going to have a lot of content in here that is going to be of questionable nature. That's coming out here is part of the reason why we did it, so that people younger than age 18 can actually get in.
Wow.
Educational material is not very useful if, you know, only adults who already have a previous knowledge of this are the only ones who can get in most cases. So
exactly, and I've used your museum, the this sim is prime example in every argument I've had lately. where this is just an amazing immersive experience for students, and to not be able to get into that in Second Life just seems criminal to me. So am I understanding that this is just starting up and hasn't really opened yet, or where is it at?
It is open. People can come into it. Mm-hmm. We do have the situation, of course, to where that there are only going to be a limited amount of people who can get in at one time. But okay. That's a technological limit currently that we're looking into fixing and allowing more and more people in at one time. Simulators, of course, can only allow a certain number of people in to a single spot due to the nature of this being something like an MMO. It's transmitting data to and from. We can get, 20, 40. The actual stress test depends on a lot of factors, but we're limited in the maximum number that can be in any region at one time. We have other things that we're looking at that may allow us to increase that number based on new technologies, but it's an ongoing process. Currently, though, yes, it is open. People can wander. You've gotten in, of course.
Yes.
We are not limiting logins ourselves or saying certain people can't come in. It's just an entire classroom would probably take over this region or take over these systems for the moment, and maybe one classroom be able to get in. We have looked. We do realize the idea that once a few classrooms come in, a lot of them might, and there are a lot of classrooms across the entire world. Yeah. So there are certain limits to what we can provide with this. As soon as we find a more open solution to that, we'll be moving on with that as well.
Great. So right now you have the King Tut exhibit. Are you planning other type of sims?
Oh, yes, there are others in planning. I'm not exactly open to be able to say what,
sure.
But if you contact John Himoff later, you may be able to get that information from him. I don't know if we have disclosure agreements with other people with that.
Sure. And so right now, is it going to be, just open for anybody to be able to go in kind of at your own risk? Because, like you said, you wouldn't be able to, stop conversations.
Well, it's
happening.
Just like an internet chat room.
Yeah.
If we find out about it, of course, we can do everything from, banning to trying to clear up the issue. But, it's just like any internet chat room.
Right.
The ability to do so is limited based on, how aggressive the person wanting to do it is. So, when it comes down to that, it's always at your own. The internet is always at your own risk.
Definitely. Yeah. Have you thought about any filtering? Since you're gearing this towards students, any filtering?
We're gearing it so that it is open to students, but right. Not towards students
sure.
Entirely.
Yeah.
And as of the moment, no. Currently, OpenSim is an alpha software.
Mm-hmm.
So in and of itself, it's a full-time job keeping everything operating at a good level and upgrading it so that it can deal with getting rid of bugs and other issues. Currently adding features other than what we need for basic functionality, not on our table at the moment.
Right.
It's a matter of resources versus the amount of work.
But
we are looking into that. We may be looking into other versions of it where, depending, may not even need chat or interaction, just ability to walk through it without that. So it removes that from the entire, removes that from the equation to make it to where they can just wander through without having to worry about the communication issues that might come up.
Exactly.
Especially for younger classes.
Yeah, and that's where I teach. I'm in a K-4 school. And you're right. It really is kind of a solo experience when you get into that museum and you're listening to the recordings, kind of like a docent telling you all about the artifacts. You don't really need chat. They could talk to each other right in the room. That would be great. Another idea we've been thinking about is, like, if somebody were to build a browser where everybody else is invisible to you, you know, to your class, unless you invite them in. That's one idea we've been kicking around. So what is OpenSim? Can you explain that to me?
OpenSim, and keep in mind, I'm not the expert on it. I maintain the servers that OpenSim is operating on. I actually maintain the operating systems, the support systems for OpenSim, maintaining backups. I'm generally the IT guy that sits in the back room and makes sure the servers go, you know, continue to operate, that everything's running on. But OpenSim itself is the third-party equivalent to Second Life servers, the ones that operate the Sims that people can move on. So they're the equivalent of the Apache web servers and MySQL databases.
Okay.
It stores the inventory of the asset server portion of it, stores your inventory, all of the different objects based on their keys, UUID keys, keeps track of messages and communication, generally organizes everything. And then there's the other part of the server, which are the region servers, which, for example, you're standing in right now, 256 by 256 meter area, filled with prims and containing avatars, basically a virtual representation of a database full of objects and keys. So this is how everything's laid out from here. The database, for example, contains their position, rotations, all the various data, and allows us to display this information in a useful function. And each simulator that you go into, 256 by 256, has its own region server. You teleport between these or walk between these depending on if the sims are attached to each other. And each, let's see, I think on some of our high-end servers we can have anywhere between 8 and 14 region servers on a particular physical server.
Okay.
Limited by memory and how much CPU they're using.
So let me back up a little bit and make sure that I understand this. Is this this is your own server, completely separate from Second Life?
Yes, OpenSim is open source software that allows you to run a server that acts in a similar fashion to the Second Life servers.
Right, and so when they went to open source, that's what made this possible. That anybody could set up an OpenSim anywhere, providing you have the server space, I guess. Or is it only at a place called OpenSim?
Oh, no. We actually have Darren, the one you met first.
Mm-hmm.
He is maintaining our source code on this.
Okay.
We don't own the servers, of course. We are leasing them from a company that has server rack space.
Yeah.
We pay a monthly fee, of course, for those servers, just like you would for any other web system. But we're basically renting full dedicated servers.
Right.
These full dedicated servers are then loaded with the OpenSim software. And we are able, with Darren's help, we are able to get these things running, organized, and you're currently walking basically through one of our servers we're renting. So this is totally Second Life has nothing really to do with that other than the fact, or in this case, you're probably using their client to access it. You may be using the Heritage Key client too. It depends on which one you chose to do.
That's what I am using. So you can actually use the Second Life browser and connect to this server or any OpenSim, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
But the one thing to remember about OpenSim is OpenSim was made without actually seeing the source code of Second Life. It's made to emulate it for all intents and purposes and act something like it.
Wow. It looks almost exactly like it. So,
well, remember, the client does most of the visual representation.
Sure.
Technically, all this is it's like the difference between an Apache web server and some of the others out there.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you see it on your screen, well, your actual client, the web browser, has done most of the work.
Right.
Well, in this case, it's a similar fashion. So All this is providing the data and organizing it. Now, that's part of what we're maintaining, because it does take, you know, regular patches and updates in order to make sure that it's, right, you know, correcting some issues we're running into. But, yeah, that's its basic job. It just provides data to the client so you can see it this way.
That's great. So, at this point, the King Tut exhibit is completely out of Second Life?
As far as I know, yes. Okay. It should have been moved here, and something left there forwarding to this point.
That's how I found my way here. And as far as, like, one question I had, you know, was thinking earlier, when you say so many students can come on, is there a possibility of, like, duplicating this sim several times so that, you know, there's actually more than one Egyptian museum that people could go visit to get more people in?
I'm glad you asked that. Actually, one of the systems our designers and programmers are going into is a sharding system. Concept of this is that new sims or regions, that term's interchangeable, sims or regions, these new regions can be brought up as the area fills up and allows us to forward new people into it. Now, there are, of course, some issues with that, but there are items we're working through. One of them is that what happens when a new region fills up and the classroom's half filtered into it.
Right.
Well, they get half the class gets forwarded onto the next area because there's just no more room.
Right.
There may be possible ways around that, but not without a lot of hedging around and trying to, you know, figure out exactly how. We might need to know that the class is there ahead of time so that we can mark them together. There's no real way to know that a whole class is one group, for example. Let's see here. What else were you wanting to know?
Well, where can people go to really get the scoop on this? Because this is, you know, brand new to me. And
heritage-key.com.
Okay, so that's the best place. And heritagekey.com.
Heritage-key.com.
Okay. And we actually would love to talk to you more. I have a group in Second Life that we just started called K-12 in SL Now. You know, just sort of a group of teachers that are frustrated that we can't get kids in there. So this is, you know, just a huge inspiration to what we're trying to seek out. Is there some way we could set up a meeting with you folks, either in SL or here? I'm sure other people will have many more questions than I'm able to come up with.
Well, I'm sure we can come up with a Skype connection.
That'd be great.
So that a lot of us can talk together, and if Skype can't handle the numbers, we might be able to do it through use of some other chat medium that allows us to all talk at once.
Sure.
Do you know how many people we're talking about here?
We were actually planning on doing a podcast in a couple weeks to continue the conversation. But right now, probably about 5 to 8. So, yeah, there'd be some issues in Skype if we were to do that. Right now, I'm recording this with Nicecast, and I think I could bring that up in Second Life as well and record audio there. Works best with audio, for sure.
Okay, well, I mean, don't get me wrong, we can always have them listening to some sort of broadcast and they can chat their questions back, but I think Skype can deal up to 10 people, was it?
Oh, really?
Or was it 8? I think so.
Okay, that's... Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I'm part of Seedlings, and we do a... Well, we're on hiatus now for summer, but we do a broadcast each Thursday through EdTech Talk. So we broadcast live there and then turn it into a podcast. So that's sort of how we've mostly worked, which is sort of a separate group from the K-12, but some of the same members. Who could I contact for further information?
That would probably be John Himoff. Currently, he's away on business.
Okay.
We're going to be seeing him back, we think, towards the beginning to middle of next week.
Okay.
Like I said, it depends on how business goes on that. But when he gets back, he is pretty much the forward person that you'd want to be speaking to on that.
Okay, great.
Let me think here. As to technology questions, the ones I can answer, of course, I'll be glad to, you know, give you a discussion on that. To be perfectly honest, though, it comes down to a lot of we patch things, we make things work, we push forward the technology, wiggle our fingers, magic happens. So very boring stuff to talk about in most cases, unless you're really into coding. And if you're not, it all sounds like the word someone repeating the word geek, 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 geek over and over again.
Right. Yeah, my brain understands half of what you've said about the servers, but I still find it fascinating. all the puzzle pieces are coming together for sure. And John, I won't put this in the podcast, but do you want to give me your last name?
Well, technically Foolish. I'm Foolish Frost as far as anyone knows me.
Okay. I'll just say Foolish
Frost. Yes, they know me for my wonderful concerts and other things I do. So.
Oh, great. Where do you do that in Second Life?
I've written several songs that probably would not be good for kindergartners for a lot of reasons. let's just say I talk about the condition. A lot of my parodies have a tendency to talk about the condition of people in SL and my thoughts on it. And if you've kept up with current events in Second Life.
Yeah, see, that's the problem I have, and I usually go
my
in
music
and
is made
work.
Entirely for adults, okay?
You know? So you were Foolish in Second Life as well? Foolish Frost?
Yes, I'm Foolish Frost in Second Life as well.
Okay, I look for you there.
We did, I used to do a lot of custom-made buildings for people like Proc Neva. That was, you know, a fun time. Let's see here, and let me think here. Oh, I was all over the place. I've gotten a lot more quiet in Second Life since then. But.
Yeah, see, there are realms of Second Life that I just barely even have a grasp on, because I usually go in and work with other teachers, and then, you know, but I'm trying to kind of learn about the whole culture. I just, I'm reading Coming to Age in Second Life right now, that anthropological study of it, and then I just finished... I'm having a block of the writer's name, but Second Lives. Tim Guest. Is that it? Tim Guest, I think. So.
Well, here's one for you. Did you ever read A Fool's Guide to Second Life?
No, I haven't.
Probably you came in after that one discontinued. I actually wrote one of the wrote a guide to Second Life at one point.
Oh, great. Okay.
So that was something I'd done. I don't know. You might even be able to still find it online somewhere. It sort of spread around a bit before I shut down the website.
Oh, great. Yeah, and of course, you know, like all those other layers, anthropologically I have an interest, but my main interest is, you know, what we're talking about right now is how do I get kids to this great museum that we're standing in?
Well, technically, they log in, they come in, and they... move around, but again, like I said, I still advise the teacher keep an eye on what's going on.
Right, right.
Because this is effectively taking them to a real museum, and you have to make sure, watch who the students are talking to.
Exactly. That's how I see it. I mean, you know.
This is a public place. Other people can be as impolite as they please, until such a time as we catch them and toss them out.
Right.
So.
And hopefully certain, like you were saying, certain solutions to that might help. Thank you so much for talking to me. I'm going to make this into a podcast just to get the word out, and I'm going to go back to heritagekey.com and really learn more about your site. But this is you can probably hear the excitement in my voice, because this is what I've been waiting for.
Well, like I said, we're working towards it. It just takes time to get there.
Sure.
Based on it, but one of the things is keep in mind you'll probably get a better idea. My viewpoint is from the technology side.
Yep.
So John Himoff has a better idea of where we're heading and where we're going with a lot of this.
Right, and I will definitely hunt him down.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much. I look forward to it.
All right, and you have a good day. Let me know if you need anything else.
You too. Thanks a lot, Foolish.